To order. The first order of business is approval of the minutes of March 30th. And Representative Magnus, I believe.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move the minutes of the 32nd meeting. Okay.
Any additions or corrections? Those minutes. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The amendments are approved. The first bill we have up is Representative Garofalo.
Nay. Oh.
He was here for about 10 minutes, and then I think he decided to go to his other committee, seeing we weren't able to start ours.
He's across the hall.
Yeah.
He's across the hall.
No, they're getting him.
Because mine was the last year rehash.
His bill is up?
Okay, we'll go.
Okay. I knew that he was on a tight timeline. Unfortunately, we were way behind this morning. I think we'll then go to Representative Dill's bill, House File 749. Representative Dill, if you would... But first of all, Representative Dill moves House File 749 is to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Finance Bill. Representative Dill.
Thank you, Chair Osment and members. This bill is about septic tank and performance-based septic systems that are would normally be classified as a bit higher tech than the regular septic system that you might expect to have that we've used over the last decade. This bill was also included in the omnibus bill last year that died a unfortunate death. What is happening, members, is that these performance-based systems use multiple tanks, two, three, four different tanks in their treatment process, and so therefore this fee is applied in current law is extending to mean upwards of $100 in fees for a system that actually is newer technology and is very expensive to install as a rule. In my own community, I know that's the experience that we've had. And so we're really penalizing people who are doing something good and using these newer technologies and using these multiple tank systems by charging this fee, where someone who's using an old technology, which like a single tank and a drain field line, they pay a single tank fee of $25. So what this does is this bill, the purpose of this bill is to level the playing field there and to not penalize people who are actually using creative technologies and creative thinking processes and counties who are promoting that in areas particularly that have marginal soils for use in treatment. Around lakes, up in my district, as you're aware, there's very little, there's mainly rock, very little overburden of which you could treat around lakes particularly. So with that, I have Commissioner Nelson here, Keith Nelson. If we have any questions, he is the septic guru of St. Louis County. And if we have, and of course St. Louis County is using these performance-based systems a lot now these days. So if you have any questions, fire away. If not, I'd like to have this laid over for inclusion in the omnibus bill. I think that was the motion that we made, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Commissioner, do you have any comments you'd like to make?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe Representative Dill laid it out very well for you. It seems rather ironic that we would punish those people trying to do a much better job with their septic treatment. And I believe these changes will promote individuals to do a better job with these performance-based systems. It has particular impact in the Canadian Shield areas of St. Louis County, of which Both myself and Representative Dills have constituency. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. And for the record, if you could just identify yourself on the tape, that'd be...
Keith Nelson, St. Louis County Commissioner.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions from members? Okay. Is there anyone in the audience that wanted to speak for or against House File 749? Okay. House File 749 is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus finance bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. The next bill is going to be Representative Erdahl, House File 1205. Representative Erdahl moves House File 1205 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus agricultural finance bill.
Thank you. Also have the A1 amendment.
Representative Erdahl moves House the A1 amendment to get the bill in the order that the author desires. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Bill is amended. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members. And for those who happen to have heard this in ag policy, I beg your indulgence. I want to talk today about this bill regarding the ethanol plants and the funding that is going offline. Ethanol plants that begin production before June 30th, 2000 are eligible to be subsidized for 10 years for the production of ethanol. The agreement was 20 cents a gallon up to 15 million gallons per plant per year, or $3 million per plant. Some of these plants have reached the 10-year limit of the subsidy and are now or soon will be no longer eligible for the subsidy. This presents a couple of challenges. In 2003, the legislature cut the subsidy from 20 cents to 13 cents a gallon, but a promise was made to make the plants whole once they were no longer eligible for a subsidy, and we need to keep that commitment. Also, agriculture today is about 0.3% of the state of Minnesota budget. Ethanol payments are approximately 40% of that amount. When those payments are eliminated, the ag portion of the state budget will only be about 0.16%. The purpose of this bill is to keep funds that were going to ethanol plants in the agriculture budget once the plants go off the subsidy line. House File 1096 captures any amount of the annual appropriation for ethanol producer payments and rural economic infrastructure that is in excess of the amount required to make all scheduled ethanol producer payments. It essentially establishes a fund devoted to rural economic infrastructure, including the development of processing and marketing facilities that will enhance the value of farm products. I am intentionally not specific about what the fund will be used for. We possibly could specify now, and there have been bills that have encouraged that. But I think we should first establish the fund. Once we have saved the money, we can cite ways to spend it. And we will have time to decide how the fund is spent once our existing plants receive their full producer payments. The plan is to claim this money for agriculture, to restore the 20 cents from 13 cents to the ethanol plants once they go offline, to establish a fund to be used for value added and infrastructure. The increase to 20% with money... The planning forecast that we are giving here, and Representative Junkie and others, we've had to drop the our baseline again. Basically, we're kind of losing money by the week here. And the purpose, by dropping it again, we have put the baseline outside of the tails. And the proposal, this... The money in this proposal is something that is not already being planned for. And so, members, that's where we are on this. Agriculture is a dominant industry in Minnesota. Its value should be reflected in Minnesota's budget. We can't afford to keep on losing money that has been set aside for agriculture. I have with me Steve Ernest, and he's worked through some of these numbers, and I'd like to present his description.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is Steve Ernest. I'm the budget director at the Department of Agriculture. If members want to look at the chart that we did on the original bill, what the amendment does is it moves the line down to the 15.268 level in fiscal year 2007. Second year of that biennium, the 06-07 biennium, it would just carry out the tails, but it would statutorily appropriate those tails. I'm sorry, this is not in statute. I believe this would still be in the rider, but it would appropriate that level out after the current biennium into the tails. This number is the number that the Department of Finance is carrying in the fund statement. It's the natural way we calculate a base number by carrying the second year of the biennium out, and so this would not lead to any additional expected spending for the Department of Finance's purposes, for their fund statement purposes. This is what they're counting in the base. The way the plan has, the payments have been going is 13 cents on the 20 cents, which is the white portion of the graph, 18, 15, 11, and 6. And then what this would do is capture the extra from 15, and it would take a while before there was we paid off all the deficiency payments. In the original fiscal note, there was a table that showed the 21 number we were picking, the 05 number, that's the line on the chart. And it showed that we picked up $8.8 million in the 06-07 biennium and $24 million in 08-09 over the 13 cents. What this bill would do would be pick up $12 million in the 08-09 biennium over the 13-cent payments. So in effect, it would take another biennium to pay off the deficiency payments before money would be freed up. And it also, the amendment also clarifies what I think everyone's expectations were, that the deficiency payments apply to the 20-cent level, whether it was because we paid at 13 cents or whether it was unallotted, because in fiscal year 03 there was a considerable amount unallotted.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Riddle.
So basically, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Ernest, in 2008 we could start making up the deficiency payments and the fund would begin to grow in 2012. And that fund, you know, the baseline of the, you know, 15.268 million, of course, is something that could be added to. But we have to get a start, and apparently that is where we can start.
Any further testimony? Hey, Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the department or to Mr. Rankin or Mr. Erdahl or anyone else that can help me out. Again, one of the problems I'm having with the way the department is budgeting this is, again, for the next biennium, you're proposing to take $10 million out of this fund, and you're still basing your payments on 13 cents. Why wouldn't we be moving the payment level back up towards the 20 cents rather than just taking the money, capturing it, and putting it into the general fund? Shouldn't that be the direction we go, is to make our plants whole as quick as possible after dropping them to 13 cents? And I think that's what started the bill activity this year is when we saw the biennial appropriation go from 44 to about 34 million, and you're capturing that again for budget balancing purposes rather than paying back our existing plants in an accelerated fashion, which isn't really accelerated because they've been cut from 20 to 13. And maybe you can't go back to 20, but you could go back to, it looks like, 15 or 16 cents or somewhere. Why wouldn't we be doing that to make our plants whole quicker?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the main reason why we're lowering it is because the budget bill that was passed 2 years ago gave us instructions to set the base, keep the base at 13 cents. If you look at page 43 of your budget book, I don't know if members have that with them today, but it shows the amount that we were instructed to adjust the base for. Like I said, usually the second year of the biennium is the base number. But we had a tails target. There was a tails target that had to be met, and that was written into the law. I think everyone would like to make the deficiency payments as quickly as possible, and just in the budgeting process, we weren't able to do more right now.
Mr. Chair, and maybe Mr. Rankin, can you help me too and just understand, did we set 13 for infinitum in the legislation, or are we allowed to increase those payments as funding becomes available? Ask Sam Rankin a question.
Mr. Rankin?
Mr. Chair and Representative Junkie, the rider language that was written in 2003 and covered the biennium 04 and 05 said that it acknowledged the commitment to 20 cents but said the payments were to be made at the rate of 13 cents. Further, that rider that was enacted in 2003 legislature said that when calculations are made for the 06-07 biennium, they must be made, the department must make those calculations at the 13 cent level rather than the 20 cent level. It left wide open the question of whether the 08-09 appropriation should bounce back up to the 20 cent level, or whether it also should be retained at a calculated eligibility times 13 cents per gallon. My personal thinking is that that still is a wide open question. Because the legislature explicitly said it should happen in 06 and 07, most likely the intent was for it to bounce back up to the full 20 cents when the 08-09 budget is calculated. But that's, of course, open for this legislature to decide.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Ertl, I think we got another amendment we need to do to your bill after hearing that explanation. If we're going to run into this buzzsaw every time on tails and the department saying, well, you know, it's out of our hands and we're not going to appropriate any money, you know, maybe we ought to make it clear what we're doing in 08-09 and beyond at this point before the next budget session. I think that's appropriate. And members, the other thing we can do, obviously, although money's tight, I mean, Representative Erdahl is working on 08-09 numbers, but we are the legislature and we do appropriate our own money, and we can make the decision to accelerate those payments this year if we want to with that extra money that's now being captured and put into the general fund and not going out to our plants. So, and that would be my preference.
Okay, the other questions from members? Okay. Mr. Ernst,
Mr. Chairman, just real quick, the amendment on line 10 for fiscal years 2008 and thereafter, and I don't know if that addresses what you were saying, Representative Junkie, or not.
Oh.
Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, we have to specifically see for budget years 2008 and thereafter, any plants remaining at 13 will be accelerated back to the 20 cents. When we actually have the money, it shows on the chart we have the money then too. In fact, mm-hmm. we'll have an excess going into your proposed fund at that point too. I mean, it's a baby step, but it's at least the plants that are left will get their money quicker, like I believe they should, like they were promised.
Mr. Ernest?
I believe, Representative, the statute provides for us to pay what we can for the 20 cents. This language appropriates a certain amount, and then we'll take that as far as we can go based on how many gallons are submitted for payment.
And, Mr. Chair, I appreciate that, but the definition I just got from council says it's wide open at this point, that you could interpret it either way. And I just assume we made a decision together, hopefully, to do that 20 cents and put it into statute.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Ernest?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I believe what Mr. Rankin was referring to as wide open was the expectation of how much money will be appropriated. The commitment to making the payments with what money we get, I don't believe you could categorize as wide open. We pay as much as we can on the gallon.
Mr. Chair, I understand we have a commitment to pay the total dollar amount. My question is between the 13 and 20, and I guess I'd ask Mr. Rankin again then, because I understood him to say we locked in 206 and 07, unbeknownst to me, and I'm guessing others on this committee that were there at the time, we locked that into 13 cents, but we did not lock in anything for 08 and 09 at this point. Mr. Rankin, can you help me again?
Mr. Rankin?
Mr. Chairman and committee members, that is correct. What we basically did was tell the department that when they're making their calculations of how much revenue this program is going to cost for fiscal years 06 and 07, they should calculate the amount for ethanol producer payments as the anticipated number of eligible gallons times 13 cents. It didn't say they had to pay at the 13 cents, but it said when you're submitting your budget, do so at the 13 cent level. The interesting thing is that when the governor's budget was prepared, it carried the exact same rider language for calculating at the 13 cent level over into the 08-09 fiscal years also. And not infrequently, we do just keep very similar language in riders. This may or may not have been an intentional thing that the governor's budget locks in that same limit on how they prepare the budget number that we had in the more exceptional year, perhaps, of fiscal years 06 and 07.
So, Mr. Chair, thank you. And I think you're hearing what I'm hearing, that if we want to go to 20 in 08 and 09, I mean, because, and I'm not blaming you, but, you know, like Ms. Rankin said many times, it's just, well, here's last year's template, and we move it forward and start from there. And things tend to happen that we have unintended consequences, I think. So, Representative Erdahl, I think when we're putting the omnibus bill together, I don't know if this is traveling alone or in the omnibus bill, but we should make that clear in that bill at least, what our intent is, if indeed this committee's intention is to do that.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Mr. Junkie. I think those concerns are well-founded. I'd just like to ask Mr. Ernest again. It's true that if it is true, we can start making deficiency payments in 08, and if we do, at what rate he thinks they'll be making them.
Mr. Chairman, the statute provides that at the end of the fiscal year, we make deficiency payments with whatever money we have left over. If a plant doesn't submit as many gallons as we thought they would submit, maybe they for whatever reason, or a plant leaves the program and closes down, there's more money freed up, and then we pay that on the dollar of deficiencies owed to the plants every year. We'll do that at the end of this fiscal year, and we'll do that at the end of every fiscal year with whatever money we have left over. No dollar will remain unspent.
Other questions?
No.
Here, Representative Rudolph, I'd like to get a better understanding of what the bill does. First of all, with regard to the issue on with ethanol and making sure the dollars are there and we fulfill the obligations and commitments that the legislature has with regard to the ethanol industry, I think is very critical. We do need to get better definitions and clarifications on that, get that kind of locked down, because I think that that needs to be taken care of to the best of our ability. But I have other concerns about this bill. And that is, on page 1, line 26, we're starting with a new definition of rural economic infrastructure, which means the development of activities that will enhance the value of agricultural crop or livestock commodities or byproducts or waste from farming operations. Is there anything you've left out for rural Minnesota in that definition?
We try to be all conclusive, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. And if that's the definition, then and this money would then be, according to your new appropriation or amendment, says that $15 million is annually appropriated from the general fund to the Commissioner of Agriculture for purposes of ethanol producer payments, that I agree with, and payments to providers of rural economic infrastructure. Isn't that just kind of saying that this is going to come ahead of every other priority that the general fund is obligated to? And where is that? Why would we want to do that? I need to better understand that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this fund will actually be created for 2012. And I anticipate that it will be tightened up considerably before the money is actually appropriated for anything. We are intentionally just trying to leave it very inclusive right now. It's a fairly open pool, but as if you from your contact with the Ag Policy Committee and you notice that there are several bills have been coming forward already trying to claim this money. And in fact, I made the comment to Chair Davids, how many bills are we going to have that claim the same dollars that we don't have? And There will be, as I started by saying, there will be bills, there will be laws passed that will claim this money and tighten this up. For now, we're just trying to have a pool. We're just a pool of money.
I understand. We'd all love to have this pool. Representative Rudolph,
the problem is,
how do we defend ourselves then from those that want us to try and do something similar for other future unknown, whether it be parks or whether it be, whatever. Is there a precedence for this in statutes that you're aware of to have funds set aside for undesignated future wish lists?
Yeah. Well, thinking of one, the 21st Century Mineral Fund was an example.
Yeah, we do have the Iron Ring for an example.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I'm sure that if we were to examine statute, we would find similar occurrences. But I think the defense, or one defense, certainly is what I started off by saying. That agriculture is a tremendously important industry in Minnesota, and our budget is not reflecting that importance. It's at 0.3%, and it's shrinking. Pretty soon we're going to be down to staff salaries.
In all seriousness, Representative Rudolph, the real concern I have, though, is not knowing what the needs are going to be for education, all those things. And if people have an expectation this money may be available, it may not be there anyway. And I don't know if you want to set up an expectation that there's no way we can lock in future legislatures. And so we can give them kind of a desirable direction to go in, and that maybe we can try to do that with, because I agree, it's it would be nice to hold this money available and keep it kind of earmarked. But I don't know that we would be successful at that, and I don't know that that it would really be, other than maybe give you whoever's here at that time, give them a better position for argument.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we don't know if we don't try. And secondly, another reason why I have intentionally left it open is, you know, basically going along what you were just saying. We don't know what the needs are in 2012. If we identify certain things now, when the money isn't available until 2012, it doesn't make sense to me. If we leave it open, then when the money is there, the needs will be more clearly identified.
Sounds like a Democrat.
I feel that.
excuse me. Yeah.
That was a compliment, Ernie.
That's exactly. That's exactly. I'm going to leave that one.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a suggestion to think about for the chair and the committee members, and I signed on as a co-author on this bill too, because I had similar bills coming down the pike, and rather than hear 14 of them, I think it's better to work on one. But my original concept would have been, Mr. Chair, to tighten it up to say, I mean, the history of this, as you know, or if you don't know, up until last year, there was $69 million biennium going towards ethanol fuel as a producer payment. That got cut last year to $44 million per biennium, and now it's a proposal to go down to about $34 million. And that's what got us, woke us up, because we've been talking about this for years. I would rather see the money earmarked specifically for renewable or alternative fuel development in rural Minnesota, just like we did with ethanol, for the next ethanol, or for a small grain plant, or a prairie grass plant, or whatever we're doing with ethanol in the future, because we can make ethanol a lot of things, or biodiesel, or biomass, or wind, or hydrogen, or what is the next ethanol out there. And I think this is a success story beyond belief, what we did with this money to grow it to a $1.3 billion per year industry with over 5,000 jobs. I think it was a good investment for the state. And if we could earmark, if I could wave my wand, I'd earmark this money for future renewable or alternative fuel development, and I think that would be more palatable to the entire body. And I think we can point to successes and why we're trying to do that, and that would benefit the state as a whole in the future also. So I agree with you. I'd like to see it be a little more specific, and I think maybe with the help of you and the committee, we can tighten that up a little bit as we go.
Representative Riddle, your thoughts along that line.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm amenable to making the inclusivity more or less exclusive. I don't know what I just said.
I think that was tough.
I agree with Representative Junkie that, you know, there certainly are possibilities to, you know, to tighten it up, as long as it doesn't become too, you know, too tight.
And I would think that that would be something that you could get more support for, and over a longer period of time. Recognize it's going to be a number of years between this discussion and wherever this would actually get come into play, because that would that also allows for people that are looking at a specific type of industrial growth or new industry growth, gives them some type of confidence that there's some dollars that the legislature at least has at this point in time has earmarked for their benefit. And there's some consistency within what the dollars had originally been appropriated for and what the retention would be for, rather than just opening it up to virtually everything. And I think that's really kind of where it broke down as I was looking at it. So we'll certainly work with you on that.
Yeah,
see what we can
Mr.
do.
Chairman, I'm amenable to those types of changes. Okay.
We have others who would, are there any other questions from members? Are there others who would like to testify on House File 1205? Okay. What was distributed to your members has been a sheet that shows you the language that was in the statutes 2 years ago with regard to this issue. So, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Tom Peterson, and I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union, and interesting discussion here today. And this is something that we've been very concerned about, and just support to it. I'll just be really brief. The whole concept, what we've looked at the ag budget as it's slipped the last couple of years, and we're down to 1/3 of 1%. Like they said, have the state's entire budget. We look at agriculture out in the rural areas and what it does in all the different areas and small towns. And, you know, and 40% of that being the ethanol payments is very interesting. And so we are very supportive of trying to capture some of this money for future years and future uses. And, you know, and I know that there's going to be transportation, healthcare, education costs too, but we're very concerned about agriculture and what it's going to look like years from now, and I hope that you will consider keeping this money. And I think in fuels or energy is an excellent idea. We'd like to see it available too for livestock, I'll be honest with you, but you know, we have so many members that are involved in biodiesel, ethanol, the ethanol payments too, by the way. You know, just to reiterate, I'm always so pleased with members I talk to that are very proud of their investments in the ethanol plants that they put in, and you know, and I think it's a real positive. And then this bill also providing for the catch up and efficiency payments, I think, is a good message. So I hope that you do consider, and we do support the intent of this bill anyway. So I think it's a good start. Thank you.
Any questions for Magnus? Mr. Peterson?
Mr. Chairman, may not be directly to Mr. Peterson. I do appreciate your testimony tonight, and I agree with it. But I, with what we've just got handed out, Mr. Chairman, it says the laws of Minnesota, and it starts out subdivision sources forces value-added agricultural products. To me, that's pretty open. And then towards the end, a couple sentences from the end, it says the balance of appropriation is available to the commissioner for value-added agricultural products, including value-added agriculture product processing and marketing grant programs. And Mr. Chairman and other members, I would agree we don't lock ourselves in too tightly to what we think today might be happening. Who knows what value-added agriculture program comes up next that needs a kickstart to get going, just like ethanol did when we started that.
Representative Magnus, I agree with that. My concern is that without some better sense of direction, it won't be taken seriously at the time that it really comes into play. And instead of being viewed as a vision for future assistance for a economic activity in rural Minnesota, it will be more viewed as, well, that's what they were just trying to earmark the money and latch onto it. And then it becomes strictly an economic issue instead of actually a creative way of trying to economically help rural Minnesota. So I think we're kind of all on the same page, but the more direction that we are able to bring to it, I think that the more comfort zone you'll have long term. Because we're not just looking at trying to pass something through our process here today. You want something that's actually going to survive a little test of time and be available when the dollars are actually here and to be utilized when the dollars are available. Mr. Schoenfeld, would you like to give us some testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Indeed, I would. I'm Jerry Schoenfeld. I represent a number of agricultural groups, including some of those that Representative Junkie has talked about relative to biodiesel from Minnesota soybean growers. I also represent the Minnesota Pork Producers Association. Mr. Chairman, I guess I understand the comments that have been made here about trying to give a little bit more direction, but I think the real intent of this bill is to try and to assure that there is money available for agriculture in the future. One of the things, I guess, that is a little bit different about this particular fund is that I can't think, I suspect there may be some, but I can't think of any place else in the budget where the base diminishes over time. In almost every other instance that I can think of, whether it's education or highways or health care or environmental spending or anything else. I can't think of any other base that diminishes over time and that is a planned diminished base. And I think that's one of the concerns that people from the agricultural sector have about this, is that that continues year after year. The suggestion that there are many other things, such as education and so forth, is exactly the point. That as there are all the competing interests, and particularly, I suppose, as a rural person, that as you look at those competing interests and the difficulties it is maintaining it in an environment in this legislature where rural is less and less vote count in terms of the legislature and less in terms of familiarity between members of the legislature and what happens in rural Minnesota, it makes more difficult. And I think that is the impetus that many of the rural members have in trying to do something to secure this. But I would have to tell you, in representing a couple of different interests, one, a renewable fuel. When the Minnesota soybean growers came to this legislature to try and get the 2% biodiesel mandate, one of the things we were told was that that's okay as long as you don't come after any more money like ethanol. And as that mandate went through, you probably are aware that there was no state money involved anything with the biodiesel industry. That there was federal laws that changed. There's a federal tax credit that has helped to make it more possible. But the financing of the infrastructure for biodiesel has been private. And so I don't know if for instance, and I think it's going to be successful as was ethanol. And I can tell you that the soybean growers have been very supportive of the ethanol. I think many other farm groups have been. But there may be a time for other people to get into the act in terms of what is important in rural Minnesota. I represent also a livestock group, Minnesota pork producers. And I think as Mr. Peterson had suggested, livestock is a very important part of this economy for agriculture. And we too would like to be able to see some movement in that area. I would also suggest to you that in many cases the need for quote infrastructure varies a great deal. And I know I've had conversations with you and others on this committee about the need for things to improve transportation systems and other kinds of things for it. And so I am very supportive of this bill in terms of trying to maintain a placeholder. And we often do that. You asked if there was any precedence. And there are oftentimes through legislation where there are placeholders put in into play within appropriation bills. And I think that's what this is. It's a long-term placeholder for agriculture. But I would warn against restricting it just too far. And when I speak about placeholders, Mr. Chairman, because I see the puzzled look in your face, generally it's done in a shorter kind of a period than over biennials. I understand that. But, I mean, it's a concept that we've done in terms of putting placeholders in bills until we know more information as to what it is we're going to spend the money, the exact amounts that were needed. And so I would encourage you to support the bill, but I would not encourage you to restrict it even further. I think it's important to keep those options open. Might also point out to you that there may be some consideration as to what those options may be used for. Most of us consider infrastructure to be building things, whether they are ethanol plants or whether they are whatever they might be. In some cases, we just passed a bonding bill here last night that or at least the conference committee has passed the bonding bill. And I guess one of the other considerations I think that could be made, matter of fact, I'd have a suggestion in terms of the language today. The amendment that you added says to providers of rural economic infrastructure. Personally, I'd rather see to providers of taken off and just simply to insert for rural economic infrastructure. Simply because it provides a little bit more option as to how that can be done. For instance, this could be used for servicing other kinds of debt. We have a number of programs through the Department of Agriculture and other that provide for debt service for people. And I'd prefer to see that, which may be opening it up even a bit more. But providers of, I guess, depending upon how you're reading that, could be individuals
And I'd prefer to see that it's a four rural economic infrastructure so that it was a little bit more broad. So, Mr. Chairman, I would encourage the passage of this bill, but at this point, the tightening up of it is something that I'm not certain is necessary.
Are there questions of Schoenfeld? Thank you very much for your testimony. I'm looking at the fiscal note, and I'm trying to figure out how your amendment has changed that fiscal note with regard to the tails, because it was in 08-09, the fiscal note was showing $24 million in tails. And Mr. Ernest, could you give me a breakdown as to how this fiscal note would actually be changed to reflect the amendment?
Hi, Mr. Chairman. First thing you would see on page one of the fiscal note, you would see some numbers appearing in 08 and 09. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It would still be zero, but on the chart on the second page, the row there that has the new funding would be zero in 06, zero in 07. I'm sorry. It would still be we would still be appropriating 18.745 on that second line, so it would be the same, but then the bottom line would be zero difference for fiscal year 06. For fiscal year 07, we'd still be appropriating 15.26, so the difference would be zero again for that year. But then in 08, you'd see the 15.268 on the second line. So then on the bottom line, you'd see a difference of $3.487 million. And for fiscal year 09, on the second line, you'd see the 15.268 repeated again. So then on the bottom line, you'd see a difference of $8.539 million. And then the total for the biennium on the bottom line, the 08-09 biennium would be 21.163, I believe, difference. No, I'm sorry, that would be 12.026, the sum of the 8.5 and the 3.5. So 12 million. So you'd be picking up 12 million over the 13 cent per gallon rate. So that would bring it up to the 20 cent gallon rate. It would cover the 20 cent per gallon rate in 09 if you refer to the chart again. But if you carry that 15 million line across just to 08, you see it's not quite meeting the 20 cents yet in 08. It's not covering that far.
And in your testimony, I believe you mentioned that this works so that the Department of Finance can has is comfortable with it or has works with their numbers. How does this work with the governor's proposal?
Mr. Chairman, the governor took the position in his bill of just continuing the language the way the policy has been at covering 13 cents. So his bill language covers the white portions of this, the $11 million and the $6 million in the tails. But the governor didn't appropriate that. He just put the language in again as a guideline like we did last year to say the base should be that, but the base isn't the appropriation. He would have had you or the next budget look at it again. The bill puts the appropriation into statute at the 15 million level. So if a legislature never sat down and met again, they'd still get the money.
Other questions? Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify for or against House File 1205 as amended? Okay, House File 1205 is laid open for possible inclusion in the agricultural omnibus bill. Thank you very much, Representative Riddle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
The next House file is House File 1044, Representative Garofalo. And Representative Garofalo, I apologize for not being able to take your bill earlier. When you were here, we were, didn't have a quorum at the time, so we had to kind of wait for us to gather our act, and I understand that you got a, had a commitment by that time yourself, so we're glad you're able to join us now. And I will move House File 1044, be recommended to pass, and be referred to taxes. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have an author's oral amendment here. On page 3 of the bill, line 17, after the word "its," insert the words "findings, recommendations, and." So the phrase will read as follows. The council must submit reports to the legislature regarding its findings, recommendations, and continuing planning activities under Subdivision 1. This was done at the request of Representative Wagenius pertaining to having concerns about really hardness and environmental policy.
Okay. I'll make that motion. And anyone have any questions on the amendment? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Bill's amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is briefly, this has followed three policy committees. It's been amended three times with improvements and suggestions along the way. This is a regional water supply study, and today we'll be handling talking about the financing portion of it. Very quickly, the funding for the study will come from Metropolitan Council under an underutilized fund, a bond credit enhancement fund, which has not been utilized. And there should be a detailed summary of the water supply master plan development budget being distributed to members. And with me, I'll let my fellow testifier introduce himself here.
Okay. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Judd Shetton, and I'm the Legislative Director for the Metropolitan Council, and I appreciate the opportunity to come speak to your committee. What we have here is a bill that the Met Council is trying to move forward that creates an advisory committee and as well does a study of the current drinking water. We'll do a study of the, or an analysis of the current regional drinking water supply for the metro area. We're doing this because we are the regional planning area or agency within the Seven County metro area, and what we're proposing is to create this advisory board that will include members from the Department of Agriculture, Department of Health, the Pollution Control Agency, the DNR, and also the Met Council. We're also asking to have two county officials on the advisory board, as well as five local government or non-county local officials be placed on this board, and just to ensure proper disbursement of those local and county officials. Of the seven of those who will participate on this board, each of them will come from a different county, so we make sure that every county has a participant. We believe that a secure, strong, and reliable long-term supply of high-quality drinking water is an important and valuable asset to the economic growth of the Seven County metro area, and we feel that addressing this issue now ensures that we will know that we have adequate drinking water supply for the future. As the Met Council states over and over again, we are expecting that there will be an additional 1 million people moving into the Seven County metro area by the year 2030, and that is why we're proposing to do this study today. I have two people from the Met Council with me, one being Beth Widstrom Anderson, who's our chief financial officer, and she can speak to the Housing Bond Credit Enhancement Program that we are abolishing. I don't know if this committee is interested in that. I also have Mr. Keith Buttleman, who works in our Metropolitan Council Environmental Services, who I would like to have come speak to the committee to go through the detailed studies that we're proposing to do with the $2 million that we are seeking from the Housing Bond Credit Enhancement Fund. So, Mr. Chair, I will I'll let you decide if you'd like to hear from Ms. Anderson about the Housing Credit Enhancement Fund, or if we should just move into the detailed study. The committee, we have talked about the policy issues related to this bill in local government operations, and environment policy. So those committees have heard the rationale for abolishing that program.
Okay. Are there any questions of Mr. Shetland? Okay, if you'd like to bring up other testifiers. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Keith Bartleman. I'm Assistant General Manager of the Environmental Services Division of the Metropolitan Council. As Judd mentioned, the study is to, or the legislation, the proposed bill, is to authorize funding to allow for a series of studies and assessments of water supply related issues in the metropolitan area in order to ensure that the area can accommodate the million or so new residents expected in the next several decades. Was this the summary that was distributed this morning that shows the listing of the studies and some of, and the estimated costs? I'm going to very briefly run over some of those with you. The first of all, these are rough estimates at this point. And there are a series of highly technical, scientific-type studies mixed in with less technical assessments of the infrastructure, assessments of security issues, and assessments of the existing institutional mechanisms for planning for water supply. First item on the list under phase one there would be done in combination with, would be, the actual work would be done mostly by a consultant that we would hire, but would be done in conjunction with all of the agencies that have responsibility for water supply matters, including those that were listed on the advisory committee, among others, as well as local governments. Right now there are about 106 separate public water supply utilities in the metropolitan area, and they would be represented on the advisory committee as well. Following that are listed a series of the technical type studies that would be done in conjunction with, for example, the Minnesota Geologic Survey, the Army Corps of Engineers, U.S. Geologic Survey, the Department of Health, and others to look at technical aspects of water supply, groundwater, river flow analysis, contaminants that may have an impact on water supply either at the surface or groundwater, and the ability of groundwater to be recharged through natural processes and what that means in terms of the ability to withdraw groundwater for water supply purposes. We are also currently working with a variety of local governments in the metropolitan area to deal with immediate or ongoing water supply issues of a sub-regional nature. So, for example, at the bottom of the second page, you see the Northwest Metro Water Supply Plan, and about in the middle of the page, the Southwest Metro Water Supply Plan. Those reflect cases where existing groups of local governments have gotten together and asked for assistance in resolving issues that are affecting that portion of the metro area. In one case, cities are interested in withdrawing additional groundwater, but there's an impact on a trout stream. So in that case, some of the types of studies that this bill would have done for the entire metro area were done in a localized level and found that moving the wells a little bit could save the trout stream but still result in achieving greater water supply. The end of that, what we're referring to there as phase one, would be a report back to the legislature on the findings, the recommendations, and the planning activities that would continue. And that would lead into phase two. Phase two is even more of an estimate than phase one because we expect that the studies going on in phase one would identify additional issues that would need to be refined in phase two. So those are, in effect, placeholders for the more detailed studies that would be necessary based on the findings of phase one. I realize this is a very superficial overview of the types of work that would be done. As I mentioned, at this point, without some additional detailed look, we can't be as precise as we would like to be or expect to be once we get through the first item on the agenda. I would be happy to answer questions about any of these, go into as much detail as we're able to at this point, or discuss the overall approach that we're proposing.
Okay. Any questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, will there be some kind of report then available for the public, for the legislature to review with regards to what you found out from these studies?
Mr. Chairman and representatives, yes. The report to the legislature at the end of phase one and the overall, what we're referring to as a master plan that would result from the final product, would both be public documents, and in fact all of the specific reports listed within this agenda would be public information.
Any other questions? Okay, additional testifiers?
No, Mr. Chairman, no, we didn't.
Okay. I'd like
hold that right, I'm sorry, we have one more. I forgot. My apologies, Mr. Chairman.
Before we go to public testimony, if we could just wait just a moment, if I can, on the bill, I didn't know if you had additional testifiers from the Metropolitan Council. Do you have any?
No, we don't, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Mr. Shetland, I would like to ask you about Section 2. It's on page 3. Why is that section necessary? If you're I'm just trying to follow or track what it's actually accomplishing.
Yep.
Because I understand how you're going to you're going to use this debt service or reserve dollars for this particular program, but it essentially, this is a language that authorizes you to back up that reserve, and then you delete a lot of it, but then you end up putting in language to provide another backup, which seems to be identical to what you already have. And this, that I believe that's the reason you have to go to taxes. And my experience with taxes has not been really good, so I'm wondering why that section is needed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to ask Beth Woods from Anderson, who's our CFO, to come speak to that. That is some language that was required by our bond council to make sure that we, if any of the, I'll let Mrs. Anderson handle that. Yeah, thanks, Beth.
And I guess I understand why you're deleting some portions of the way the reserve fund is now supported would need to be backed up. So I understand why that language is there. What I'm wondering is why you're deleting the original language at all. Why don't you just leave the whole thing just sit there? Because I would think it takes care of itself. But could you help me understand it?
Mr. Chair, thank you. For the record, my name is Beth Woodstrom Anderson. I am the Council's Chief Financial Officer. As we looked at revising the language for the bill with our bond council, they felt that it was important to, first of all, the language that's being deleted has two pieces to it. It allows the council, the council may levy taxes and then must levy taxes for the debt that's outstanding. Let me just back up one second. This was a credit enhancement program where the council could do credit enhancement for local housing bond issues. One deal was credit enhanced for Carver County, the Chaska Brickyard deal. So those bonds are outstanding, and as you said, Mr. Chair, that debt reserve and that backup authority has to be there for the bonds that were issued under our credit enhancement. And so when the bond council looked at the language, since we were deleting the program except for the bonds that were currently outstanding, they felt it was important to remove the council may levy taxes and only leave in the language to allow us or to require us to levy if there's a deficiency in the debt service reserve. And that is the only time the council would be allowed to levy, only for debt service reserve, only for the bonds that were credit enhanced. And it's just clarifying, bond council just felt it was important to restate it in a different way. I hope that helps, Mr. Chair.
I guess it helps from the approach you've taken. I guess I'm wondering as to why it was necessary to eliminate the program rather than just put another language in that gave you options to use the reserve for another activity. You just kept the program as is.
Mr. Chair, that would have been another approach. I think what we felt was if we were going to dedicate the $2 million, there wouldn't be any monies left to use for the credit enhancement program once the $2 million was dedicated to the new program for water supply.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, there is only about $2.2 million in the fund right now. So there's just enough to keep the credit enhancement for the current outstanding bonds and then the $2 million to move to the new program. There is no other money in the fund.
Okay. Right. Well, we'll see what your luck is.
Yeah. Any further questions, members? All right, we have some public testimony.
Welcome. Thank you, Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Cordelia Pearson. I represent the Trust for Public Land as a program manager. And I've spoken to this committee before on finance issues related to capital investment. It's not often that I come before you for something that's more policy related. Our mission is conserving prairies, lakes, rivers, wetlands, lands generally for people throughout the nation and here in the metro area. We work closely with the Metropolitan Council on the Parks and Open Space Policy and the Water Resources Management and other policies as we attempt to conserve land for the region as this region grows. It's vital that we protect and conserve our natural infrastructure here just as we build our roads and our bridges. So as you've heard many times, accommodating growth, that growth has land needs and water needs. So do our natural resources. Here in the region, there's about 1.9 million acres in the whole region. About a million of that is undeveloped. And a small fraction of that, only about 100,000 acres, is unprotected, regionally significant ecological area. That's only about 4 or 5% of the region that's regionally significant. I know the map is a little too far away for you to see, but if you would like to come up after the hearing and take a look, the Met Council has produced some maps showing their water system expansions and also their groundwater. Where is their access to groundwater and what communities are relying on that groundwater for drinking water? So the question is not how we grow, The question is not whether we grow, it's how we grow. We need to plan for these natural resource protection areas, especially where there's growth targeted for those areas. I'm speaking in support of this bill. We support doing this water supply evaluation and making recommendations. We urge the council to integrate natural resources planning into this groundwater and surface water evaluation. Many of the natural areas that remain in the metro are in this high growth area where there is a sort of crunch, as it were. There isn't good access to the Prairie du Chien aquifer, and there are high quality natural resources. So some innovative solutions will need to be created in order to accommodate that growth. And we'd urge them to integrate natural resources into this planning. Second, we've worked very closely with the Met Council on a natural resources task force. The task force report I just received last night in email, so it's just been finished. And the report urges collaboration on natural resources issues. So I see this water supply task force and advisory committee as potentially one avenue, one venue for incorporating natural resources better into Met Council planning. They do not have a standing committee on natural resources at the Met Council. And then along those lines, we encourage the advisory committee to include nonprofits and other organizations that work on water supply issues and have that expertise. There's no explicit mention of that in the list of, on the advisory committee, so we just suggest that people consider that. And then finally, the bill refers to the recommendations informing the regional development framework. That framework is revised only every 10 years, and a more frequent avenue for revising plans is in their system plans and capital improvement projects. So we just suggest that be something people consider. I brought these maps. They've been produced by the Metropolitan Council to assist in public review of the Water Resources Management Plan, and I leave them here afterwards if people want to take a look at those, because they do sometimes a picture captures 1,000 words. So with that, thank you for your consideration of this, and we support passage of this bill.
Okay. Are there questions of testifier? Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the audience who wants to speak for or against House File 1044? Okay, I'll renew the motion that House File 1044 be recommended to pass and be referred to, pardon? As amended, be referred to taxes. And but members, I'd also like to include that the portions of this bill that would be appropriate may be also considered for the omnibus bill. And so we'll kind of send it in two different directions, just in case you don't survive taxes. So any other questions on that motion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Bill is passed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Members, I think that concludes our agenda for today. And let's see, what time do we have? What type of schedule do we have for tomorrow? We have several bills. We're done. Okay. Yes, I guess we are. Time is fleeting. This is a short week, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It would catch up to me sooner or later. Okay, thank you very much, members. We shall see you later. Meeting is adjourned.